Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy. It's been a while since the last episode, but I've been getting lots of good feedback, lots of great emails, so if you've got anything to say about anything really, books to recommend, just don't worry about it, just send me an email, luke@juggler.net. luke@juggler.net is the best way to get hold of me. And so that's been really cool. I've been very, very busy over the last week or so. I've normally, when I'm away on work trips, I have a lot of free time, and I have had some free time on this trip. But I've been going between shows, and there's been lots of work as well. And also, I've been writing instead of reading in the evenings, I've been writing my National Novel Writing Month novel, and it's almost complete. So I'm looking for some people to read it and help me out with some maybe spelling corrections, grammar corrections, and also just general feedback on it so I can change the story before I release it. Now, this novel, it's really not a novel, it's very much novella length, and I've kept it short and I've kept it quite simple in some ways, because I'm going to attempt to record this as an audiobook and hopefully put it up. It'll probably be about 2 hours long, maybe 3 hours long, and I'll put it up in the feed here. Maybe as a single file, maybe as a few files in a row. I'm not quite sure. So people can download and listen to and hopefully enjoy that as well. But again, it's not quite complete. I've got to write the end. The working title is called "Get That Rat Off My Face," which might be the final title. But I'm looking for people who are willing to be sent the manuscript and check it out and give some feedback. Some first readers would be really great. So, let's get straight on to today's novel that I'm going to be reviewing, which is actually kind of two novels, but is actually the third novel in a trilogy of four books or something. Let me explain. So I'll go to the goodreadspage.com. So we've got here Peter Watts, Behemoth. Book one is B-Max, and book two is Seppuku. And this is in his Rifters series. It started off with Starfish, which I reviewed back in... Actually, I'm not quite sure which episode of the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, but ages ago, because you could download it as a free ebook. All of these from free ebooks. Maybe I'll put the link in the show notes or on the blog when I post this review. You've got Starfish, then Maelstrom, then Behemoth. And Behemoth, for length reasons, because it was a big chunky book, or publishing reasons, it was split into two novels of two halves of novels, which does make a lot of sense, in my opinion, to have the two novels split apart, because it very much is. I read it as a single novel in one single run through Behemoth, and it is definitely a book of two halves. I don't really want to go into too much about the world, because I think you should really just listen to my review of Starfish, and if you enjoyed that, that's great, and listen to the review of Maelstrom, and if you enjoyed that, that's great. I actually thought the second book, Maelstrom, was better than the first, because it's sort of like a Starfish... let me just explain. It's set in a future world, 100 years or so in the future, and the world is going to hell in a handbasket, and there's lots of, economics is going out of control, and the environment is running out of control because humans are just really fucking up everything. And it's very, very, very bleak. It's not kind of post-apocalyptic, because it's not a single apocalypse. It's just the world is falling apart bit by bit, and they need power, and power is very, very expensive, so they set up in the deep sea vents, deep ocean vents, they set up a power station down there, which they can capture the heat from underneath the sea and convert it into power, and that works out. It's out the way, it's safe from any kind of terrorist attacks, which is going on around the world, and it's safe from any kind of infiltration, because the only people who can survive down there under the water, down in the bottom of the ocean, are people who have been, genetically manipulated into being able to live deep underwater. So when they go out, they can be under kilometers of water, and they have these skin suits, which are which keep them warm and keep the water off their skin. But then they have these machines in their chest which sucks in water so they can breathe underwater, and they have these eye caps so they can see underwater, and all of the internal cavities, all of the internal air bubbles in the body are flooded with water, so when they get compressed, that's it. So you've got this kind of thing. If you've seen the movie, what's the one under the James Cameron movie, Under the Abyss. So if you've seen The Abyss, it's kind of like that kind of technology, power station. I think that's a drilling rig down the bottom, but it's that kind of thing. However, it's really, 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 really dark. And I'm not just talking about the ambient light at the bottom of the ocean is dark. It's just the whole thing is very dark because the people that they send down to the bottom of the ocean, they sent down normal people and the normal people went crazy. So instead they sent down crazy people and they kind of survived and thrived down there at the bottom of the ocean. All these people who had been victims of abuse or perpetrators of abuse and these sociopaths and all these other people were sent down there and they seemed to get on quite well down at the bottom of the ocean. Pretty cool. And so that's a whole story that's told down there at the bottom of the ocean. People are wondering what's going on. There's a disease that comes out. And then the second book, Maelstrom, is then when they go across land and there's this disease that is spreading across the land. And Lenny Clark, who is this sort of hero, kind of, well, less of a hero, more of just a protagonist in the first story, then she becomes the main vector for this disease, which is going to be spreading across the United States of America, or the former United States of America. And so it's sort of like a good travel thing. She's traveling across the country trying to get revenge, and in the same way is sort of like spreading this doomsday. She is one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and all this other imagery that you could throw in there as well. She's the angel of death, the avenging angel, all that kind of stuff. And the book ends with this sort of disease getting out of control. And so then for the third book in the series, or the third and fourth book in the series, we skip forward around about 5 years, and North America is being completely decimated by this disease. And then there's the behemoth disease. Some people have escaped from North America, but generally it's being quarantined by the rest of the world, and they're making sure nothing gets out of America because they want to stop the spread of this disease. And there's people inside North America. There's this one guy called what's his name? Achilles. No, I'm totally blanking on his name. Anyway, he is another one of these kind of weird sociopaths which has got through the system, but he's like a sociopath which has been given this drug which makes him so he can never do anything bad, but then that is subverted in the second book. So in the third book, he is pretty much controlling North America and things like that. So it's this really, I mean, it's very confused, but it's like three books or four novels length books here to get to sort of setting up this world. And there's no way that I can do it justice. But what I really love about the book is the attention to detail that Peter Watts has when he goes, right, this is this new technology that I want to talk to you about. And he'll just talk to you about it straight to your face. He'll just go, okay, this is it, this is it, this is it. And this is the technology that you need to know. This is the science between this bug on the ocean floor. This is this. Okay, and now we're going to get on with the story. Keep that in mind, and we're going to get in the story. Keep that technology in mind, and now I'm going to talk to you about these characters who have to live with this technology. Keep that disease in mind, and now we're going to like talk about how they try to control it and how they do that kind of stuff. So I really do enjoy the science fiction nature of this world. This third book, like I say, book three, B-Max, starts, and they're down at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean this time, where some people have tried to escape from North America because they think the world is going to end. They think, okay, if we go down to the bottom of the ocean, we're safe down there from the disease, from the diseases that are floating around up in the atmosphere. We're down here, we're going to be safe. We've got power that we can get from the ocean bottom, we've got oxygen, we've got food, we've got everything that we need, except the rifters turn up, the psychopaths, the sociopaths, who can breathe underwater, have turned up there at the bottom of the ocean again. So you've got the people who escaped, the rich people who are living inside of this underwater base, and then you've got the rifters who are outside, and there's this kind of cold war going on between the two of them. They both need each other. One of them's got technology, one of them's got freedom to sort of move around outside, and so there's the first half of the book, B-Max, sort of talks about this conflict between the two people, the two groups of people, the corpses, which are the corporate people And then outside, the Rifters, who are the cyborgs with the machines in their chests who can breathe underwater. And then the fourth book, Seppuku, is they're trying to work out if there is a cure for the disease, for the Behemoth disease, and then the B-Max disease, and then the Seppuku disease. These are more diseases that are ravaging the world. So they go back up. Lenny Clark and Ken Lubin go back up to North America, and there they meet a doctor. I can't remember the doctor's name now. Again, it's been a while since I read this book. Maybe I should have actually made some notes as I was going through here. I found this other guy's name here. So Lenny Clark, Ken Lubin, and Achilles Desjardins. They're like the three kind of Rifter characters. No, Achilles isn't. Achilles he's the guy who's running North America. And so in that fourth book, it suddenly really starts taking off again, because I thought in B-Max, the third book, I thought the story was a bit like less significant than the second novel, where it's like, okay, the apocalypse is coming and it's ravaging across America, and then suddenly in the third book it narrows down to this very small group of people at the bottom of the ocean who are so disconnected from everybody else that they don't know what's going on. And then the fourth book we realize, oh, okay, now we understand what's going on. Oh, this is going. So yeah, the story is pretty good, and I don't want to spoil it too much. I've gone into quite a few details here, but yeah, it's interesting that Achilles suddenly becomes the bad guy, and Ken Lubin, who was the bad guy, is now the good guy, and Lenny Clark, who was trying to avenge people and was trying to spread the disease and trying to end the world, is now trying to save the world. So it's like all of the roles that people had in the second book are now kind of switched around again, and everyone's free, and they do meet up. There is a fourth character that comes up in the fourth book, which is a doctor, a doctor's character. Maybe I can I find a mention of her name anywhere here? Taka Ulietta, and she's the doctor who is trying to do her best to make people in North America who are ravaged by these diseases, she does her best to try and fix them up, even though most people she can't save, but at least she can give them a good euthanasia death. And if there's people who have died, she drives around in this truck and you know, cremates them so the diseases don't keep spreading and things like that. And so Ken and Lenny and Taka sort of get together and try to work out what these different diseases are and try to save the world. And at the same time, Achilles is just constantly sort of, he thinks he's getting in the way, and you're never quite sure if he's really helping, and you're never quite sure what he's doing. He is a total psycho, and we do get quite a few scenes of him being a total psycho, and it's quite disturbing. No, very disturbing, the kind of things that they go through. And when he finds people and starts torturing them in a very kind of sadistic, sexual way, and it's really bad. And then you work out, oh, wait a second, this guy is pretty much running the whole of the North American continent. He's the guy who's got the power, and everyone thinks that he can't, because he's got the guilt trip drug, and everyone thinks that he can't do anything wrong, and it turns out he is doing stuff wrong all the time, and it is very disturbing. So we have a very, very, very bleak book, very, very bleak. And there's this great quote that I just saw here on Peter Watts's Wikipedia page. It goes, "Whenever I find my will to live becoming too strong, I read Peter Watts." And that's a quote by James Nichol, SF critic. And that is really what we get here. There is nothing in this book which makes you smile. Well, a few times, but there's nothing in this book which can make you happy. The things that you're smiling at are like the slight, relief from the grinding grimness of this, of the characters and the grimness of the world. And it is like, and it's very impressive. Most people, if you don't like pessimistic, realistic kind of science fiction, I say realistic as in, like, in any situation, what is going to be the main cause for stuff going wrong? Is it going to be the evil guy? Well, in this case, we do have one of the most evil villains that I've ever read in a science fiction book. But a lot of the time, stuff goes wrong just because people fuck up and people make mistakes. And so many times, it's like, oh, sorry, I didn't have the right information. I just made this decision and it was the wrong decision. You think massive, like in the culture books, they talk about, Ian M. Banks talks about the fuck up theory of history. And the fuck up theory of history is just like, you may think people were planning this and you may think it was all part of a, you know, a big sort of course and there's all these theories that go. It's like, no, people just fucked up. And when they fucked up, everything went wrong. And in this book, we do get people just fucking up and going, oh shit, oh fuck, oh right, sorry, I've just ended the world just by accident. And it's like that kind of thing in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where you read the excerpts from the book, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and they say, oh, and they did this, and then they wiped out the entire race of people just because somebody made a mismanagement error here, and suddenly the world ended and everyone was wiped out, and you're like, oh, okay. And they play it for laughs in the culture novels and in the Hitchhiker's novels. It's sort of played for laughs, whereas here you can get that same kind of thing, but it's, you know, it's tragic. It's like, say, bleak. On a level that most science fiction I've ever read, or most fiction I've ever read, just doesn't even come close to. So this is not a series for people who don't like bleak. But I did find the stories in this final book very satisfying. I didn't find it as exciting, as edge of the seat, as the second book, the Maelstrom book. And it's not so much, it's not a good examination of the characters as the first book was, because you've got this very small set of characters in Starfish, and you really get into their heads and you find out what's going on, you find out the reasons they're there and the mystery surrounding that, and the, you know, the kind of corporate world too. You can sort of see that going on, the corporate, what I'm trying to think of, like the conspiracy that's there as well. In this book, you don't really get the depth of the characters that I wanted. In some places you do, but I thought the characters were a bit weaker, because what made them so strong in the first two books have suddenly been flipped on its head. Lenny Clark is now wanting to save the world rather than destroy it, but she's not very intelligent compared to Ken Lubin and Achilles Desjardins, and it's like, well, why are we following her character? And she sort of seems to tag along for the ride. She was very good at accidentally being the angel of death in the second book, but she's not very good at intentionally saving the world in the third book. I mean, she does it. I mean, she gets along with it, but it's very much she's hanging on the coattails of these other people. And I couldn't see, like, at the beginning of these books, these last two books in the series, I could understand why Lenny had become sort of like a leader with the Rifters at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. But then as the book went on, it kept making me wonder. It's like, well, why did people find her so engaging? Was she just like the highest functioning sociopath, or the lowest functioning sociopath? I'm not quite sure which way around you'd look at it that way. And she could control people who otherwise didn't understand any kind of interaction with other people. So yeah, that's one of those strange things about her character, is that what made her character so intimidating and interesting in the first two characters, which was in part that ignorance and was in part that, not stupidity, but that kind of almost naivety, seemed to play against her as a main, like as a protagonist who was driving the story forward in this fourth book. But I did like the Taka, the new character, the Doctor. I thought she was quite interesting too. She obviously had demons in her past, and it was good as well that she wasn't like, oh, I'm going to be the best Doctor in the world and I'm going to discover this and I'm going to discover that and do this. It's like, no, she's actually like a failed Doctor. She did something wrong. She fucked up, and then that's why she's like earning her redemption by going out into the world and helping lost causes, because that's all she can really do, is sort of like ease the suffering of people whose causes are already lost. So yeah, the story is pretty good in this book, but not as good as the first two books. The world is very interesting. I really like sort of skipping forward 5 years and seeing all of the havoc, all of the chaos that was being unleashed in the second book, and then you see the results of it. And so many times in these post-apocalyptic novels, it's a bit too cozy for everyone. And here, there is just no coziness in this book. It's not like the Day of the Triffids and everyone dies and then everyone just gets on and everyone lives like an idyllic life in the countryside. You don't get anything like that. And it's the exact opposite of something like Alas, Babylon, where all the bombs drop and they just kind of get on and, you know, everyone makes up and everyone's happy with each other, you know, none of that kind of stuff at all. This is bleak, which is good. So yeah, that's pretty much, I think that may be all I've got to say about this. Just download it. Download the first book, Starfish, if you enjoy it. Download the second book, you might enjoy it more. And lots of people, when I reviewed Starfish and then Maelstrom, I sent off an email to Peter Watson, and he emailed me back and say, hey, Lots of people think the first book is the best. Lots of people think the second book is the best. It says virtually nobody thinks the third book, the Behemoth, B-Max and Seppuku books, nobody thinks they are the best books. And it's true. I don't think these books are as good as the first two books in the series, but it does complete the story. It does wrap everything up. Well, actually, it doesn't wrap everything up because this is not the kind of series where things get wrapped up in satisfying ways. Even though it is in the first novel and in the second novel here, he really has twisted the whole idea and went, okay, we're going to take this idea of grim science fiction and grim post-apocalypse now. We've gone through the apocalypse in the second book, and so now it's post-apocalypse. What's it going to be like? And you're not going to be happy with the result. And that's pretty much what you get. He's just saying, hey, guess what, guys? You're not going to be happy with the result. Which means that, of course, the fourth book in the series, the third and fourth books in the series, aren't as good because, like I say, it's just not in the same level, but he's going in a different direction. I think that's quite brave. And now, a lot of novelists, when they sort of lose steam in the third and fourth books in the series, I just go, well, they've lost steam. Whereas in this way, I can really see what Peter Watts is going for, and he's very clearly setting out in the first book and then in the second book and then through in these third and fourth books, a vision of the future, which means that when you get to the end of his vision of the future, you're not going to be happy. And yeah, and I'm just saying that I give full credit in this place. Some people would do something like this by accident, but there are some of these, there are some authors who intentionally do stuff, and you can see them in the novel saying, I am intentionally doing this kind of thing. I'm intentionally creating these characters. And in the fourth book, hey, I'm going to reverse all the roles. I'm going to swap them round again, which is, and you know, the protagonist is still a protagonist and the people that they're working for, but suddenly all of their goals are different. All of their aims are different. So you're rooting for them in different ways, and again, that's very intentional. So what else do I normally talk about on these podcasts? I guess that's about it, really. I told you it's going to be a short review. I say read this. Let me just bring up now I'll bring up the list of novels that I have here. Let me go down to Peter Watts. Okay, Blindsight, which is not in this series, I gave 4 stars. Starfish, in the first book in this series, I gave 3.5 stars. Maelstrom, I gave 4.5 stars, because I think it was a much better book. This, I'm just going to give 3.5 stars again. It's kind of the same level of Starfish, but in a totally different way. And for the whole series, I'd give it a good 4 stars. It is a very, very good series of books. They sit together very well. It doesn't run out of steam. It doesn't run out of ideas. Peter Watts has got more ideas in like one chapter than most science fiction authors has. It's really, really good, hard science fiction, but hard science fiction which isn't about quantum physics and going to the stars. It's about biology and going to the bottom of the ocean, and there's just nothing else. I've not really read any other series even slightly comparable to this. So 4 stars in total for the series, and for these two books, the Seppuku and B-Max sort of like behemoth novel duo of novels that finish out this trilogy of 4 books, I'm going to give 3.5 stars, which means Peter Watts is one of my highest rated authors here on the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast, up along with people like, who else have I got here? Werner Vinge, he's another high rated author, I guess. Robert J. Sawyer. Nah, I'm kidding. Alistair Reynolds, Kim Stanley Robinson, these guys, Richard Morgan, hit and miss. You know, I'm just looking through the list of authors here. So that's what you can actually do. Go over to sfbrp.com, and if you click on episode lists, you'll see a list of every novel that I've reviewed so far, or at least the majority of them that I've done a normal episode on here. So you can see everything listed by star ratings, by episode number, and scroll down to the bottom or click on the link, and you can go down and see everything, all the books ordered by author. So you can see the authors that I like and see the series of books that I enjoy. So that's it for me. Keep emailing in, luke@juggalo.net. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurridge there. You can even become my friend on Facebook, although mostly on Facebook I talk about my travels and my juggling. You can find me there too. My blog is at lukeburridge.com/blog, and everything that I do creatively gets posted on there, except this podcast. I put up all my photos there and travels and videos and all that kind of stuff. And again, if you want to read my fiction, you can either email me, luke@juggalo.net, and you can get my latest little novella once I've finished it. Get that rat off my face. Or you can or you can just read my fiction on my website. You can find it there. That's it, guys. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.